So, later in the forenoon, after an ample and well-irrigated breakfast, he called his chamberlains and courtiers about him, and took counsel with them. And some advised him to ignore the invitation of Nomura, and others held that the invitation be accepted, lest a graver evil than the trampling of ghostly hooves be sent upon the palace and the city. Then Zotella called the many priesthoods before him in a body, and sought to resummon the wizards and soothsayers who had fled privily in the night. Among all the latter, there was none who answered the crying of his name through Umaos, and this aroused a certain wonder. But the priests came in a greater number than before, and thronged the hall of audience, so that the paunches of the foremost were straightened against the imperial dais, and the buttocks of the hindmost were flattened on the rear walls and pillars. And Zotella debated with them the matter of acceptance or refusal. And the priest argued, as before, that Nomura was nowhere wise concerned with the sending, and his invitation, they said, portended no harm, nor bail to the emperor. And it was plain, from the terms of the message, that an oracle would be imparted to Zotella by the wizard, and this oracle, if Nomura were a true Archimage, would confirm their own holy wisdom, and re-establish the divine source of the sending, and the gods of Xylac would again be glorified. Then, having heard the pronouncement of the priests, the emperor instructed his treasurers to load them down with new offerings, and calling unctuously upon Zotella and all his household the vicarious blessings of the several gods, the priest departed. And the day wore on, and the sun passed its meridian, falling slowly beyond Umos, through the spaces of the afternoon that were floored with sea-ending deserts. And still Zotella was irresolute, and he called his wine-bearers, bidding them pour for him the strongest and most magisterial of their vintages. But in the wine he found neither certitude nor decision. Sitting still on his throne in the hall of audience, he heard, toward middle afternoon, a mighty and clamorous outcry that arose at the palace portals. There were deep wailings of men and the shrillings of eunuchs and women, as if terror passed from tongue to tongue, invading the halls and apartments. And the fearful clamor spread throughout all the palace, and Zotella, rousing from the lethargy of wine, was about to send his attendants to inquire the cause. Then, into the hall, there filed an array of tall mummies, clad in royal cerements of purple and scarlet, and wearing gold crowns on their withered craniums. And after them, like servitors, came gigantic skeletons who wore loincloths of Nacarat orange, and about whose upper skulls, from brow to crown, live serpents of banded saffron and ebon had wrapped themselves for headdresses. And the mummies bowed before Zotella, saying, with thin, sere voices,
"We, who were kings of the wide realm of Tassun aforetime, have been sent as a guard of honor for the Emperor Zotella, to attend him as is befitting when he goes forth to the feast prepared by Nomura."
Then, with dry clickings of their teeth, and whistlings as of air through screens of fretted ivory, the skeletons spoke,
"We, who were giant warriors of a race forgotten, have also been sent by Nomura, so that the Emperor's household, following him to the feast, should be guarded from all peril, and should fare forth in such pageantry as is meet and proper."
Witnessing these prodigies, the wine-bearers and other attendants cowered about the imperial dais or hid behind the pillars, while Zotella, with pupils swimming starkly in a bloodshot white, with face bloated and ghastly pale, sat frozen on his throne and could utter no word in reply to the ministers of Nomura. Then, coming forward, the mummy said in dusty accents, "All is made ready, and the feast awaits the arrival of Zutella." And the cerements of the mummies stirred and fell open at the bosom, and small rodent monsters, brown as bitumen, eyed as with accursed rubies, reared forth from the eaten hearts of the mummies, like rats from their holes, and chittered shrilly in human speech, repeating the words,
"All is made ready, and the feast awaits the arrival of Zutella."
The skeletons, in turn, took up the solemn sentence,
"All is made ready, and the feast awaits the arrival of Zutella."
And the black and saffron serpents hissed it from their skulls. And the words were repeated lastly in baleful rumblings by certain furry creatures of dubious form, hitherto unseen by Zutella, who sat behind the ribs of the skeletons as if in cages of white wicker.
"All is made ready, and the feast awaits the arrival of Zutella."
Like a dreamer who obeys the doom of dreams, the emperor rose from his throne and went forward, and the mummies surrounded him like an escort, and each of the skeletons drew from the reddish-yellow folds of his loincloth a curiously pierced, archaic flute of silver, and all began a sweet and evil and deathly fluting as the emperor went out through the halls of the palace. A fatal spell was in the music, for the chamberlains, the women, the guards, the eunuchs, and all members of Zotella's household, even to the cooks and scullions, were drawn like a procession of nightwalkers from the rooms and alcoves in which they had vainly hidden themselves. And marshaled by the flautists, they followed after Zutella. A strange thing it was to behold this mighty company of people, going forth in the slanted sunlight towards Namura's house, with a courtier of dead kings about them, and the blown breath of skeletons thrilling eldritchly in the silver flutes. And little was Zutella comforted when he found the girl Obexa at his side, moving, as he, in a thraldom of involuntary horror, with the rest of his women close behind. Coming to the open portals of Namura's house, the emperor saw that they were guarded by great crimson wattled things, half dragon, half man, who bowed before him, sweeping their wattles like bloody besoms on the flags of dark onyx. And the emperor passed with Obexa between the louting monsters, with the mummies, the skeletons, and his own people behind him in strange pageant, and entered a vast and multi-columned hall, where the daylight, following timidly, was drowned by the baleful, arrogant blaze of a thousand lamps. Even amid his horror, Zutella marveled at the vastness of the chamber, which he could hardly reconcile with the mansion's outer length and height and breadth, though these indeed were of most palatial amplitude. For it seemed that he gazed down great avenues of topless pillars, and vistas of tables laden with piled-up viands and thronged urns of wine that stretched away before him into luminous distance and gloom as of starless night. In the wide intervals between the tables, the familiars of Namura and his other servants went to and fro incessantly, as if a phantasmagoria of ill dreams were embodied before the emperor. Kingly cadavers, in robes of time-rotted brocade, with worms seething in their eye-pits, poured a blood-like wine into cups of the opalescent horn of unicorns. Lamias, trident-tailed, and four-breasted chimeras came in with fuming platters lifted high by their brazen claws. Dog-headed devils, tongued with lulling flames, ran forward to offer themselves as ushers for the company. And before Zutella and Obexa, there appeared a curious being with the full-fleshed lower limbs and hips of a great black woman, and the clean-picked bones of some titanic ape from there upward. Verily, it seemed to Zotella that they had gone a long way into some malignly litten cavern of hell, when they came to that perspective of tables and columns down which the monster had led them. Here, at the room's end, apart from the rest, was a table at which Nomura sat alone, with the flames of the 7 horse-skull lamps burning restlessly behind him, and the mailed black image of Thassadon towering from the altar of jet at his right hand. And a little aside from the altar, a diamond mirror was upborne by the claws of iron basilisks. Nomura rose to greet them, observing a solemn and funeral courtesy. His eyes were bleak and cold as distant stars, in the hollows wrought by strange fearful vigils. His lips were like a pale red seal on a shut parchment of doom. His beard flowed stiffly in black anointed banded locks across the bosom of his vermilion robe, like a mass of straight black serpents. Zotella felt the blood pause and thicken about his heart, as if congealing into ice. And Obexa, peering beneath lowered lids, was abashed and frightened by the visible horror that invested this man and hung upon him even as royalty upon a king. But amid her fear, she found room to wonder what manner of man he was in his intercourse with women.
"I bid you welcome, O Zotella, to such hospitality as is mine to offer,"
said Nomura, with the iron ringing of some hidden funereal bell deep down in his hollow voice.
"Prayeth thee, be seated at my table."
Zotella saw that a chair of ebony had been placed for him opposite Nomura, and another chair, less stately and imperial, had been placed at the left hand for Obexa. And the twain seated themselves, and Zotella saw that his people were seated likewise at other tables throughout the huge hall, with the frightful servants of Nomura waiting upon them busily, like devils attending the damned. Then Zotella perceived that a dark and corpse-like hand was pouring wine for him in a crystal cup, and upon the hand was the signet ring of the emperors of Xylac, set with a monstrous fire opal in the mouth of a golden bat, even such a ring as Zotella wore perpetually on his index finger. And turning, he beheld at his right hand a figure that bore the likeness of his father, Pitam, after the poison of the adder, spreading through his limbs, had left behind it the purple bloating of death. And Zotella, who had caused the adder to be placed in the bed of Pitam, cowered in his seat and trembled with a guilty fear. And the thing that wore the similitude of Pitam, whether corpse or an image wrought by Nomura's enchantment, came and went at Zotella's elbow, waiting upon him with stark, black, swollen fingers that never fumbled. Horribly he was aware of its bulging, unregarding eyes, and its livid purple mouth that was locked in a rigor of mortal silence, and the spotted adder that peered at intervals with chill orbs from its heavy-folded sleeve as it leaned beside him to replenish his cup or to serve him with meat. And dimly, through the icy mist of his terror, the emperor beheld the shadowy armored shape, like a moving replica of the still grim statue of Thassadon, which Nomura had reared up in his blasphemy to perform the same office for himself. And vaguely, without comprehension, he saw the dreadful ministriant that hovered beside Obexa, a flayed and eyeless corpse in the image of her first lover, a boy from Sintrum who had been cast ashore in shipwreck on the Isle of the Torturers. There Obexa had found him, lying behind the ebbing wave, and reviving the boy, she had hidden him a while in a secret cave for her own pleasure. and had brought him food and drink. Later, wearying, she had betrayed him to the torturers, and had taken a new delight in the various pangs and ordeals inflicted upon him before death by that cruel, pernicious people.
"Drink,"
said Nomura, quaffing a strange wine that was red and dark as if with disastrous sunsets of lost years. And Zotella and Obexa drank the wine, feeling no warmth in their veins thereafter, but a chill as of hemlock mounting slowly toward the heart.
"Verily, 'tis a good wine,"
said Nomura,
"and a proper one in which to toast the furthering of our acquaintance. For it was buried long ago with the royal dead, in amphora of somber jasper, shapen like funeral urns, and my ghouls found it, whenas they came to dig into Asun."
Now it seemed that the tongue of Zotella froze in his mouth, as a mandrake freezes in the rim-bound soil of winter, and he found no reply to Nomura's courtesy.
"Prayeth thee, make trial of this meat,"
quoteth Nomura,
"for it is very choice, being the flesh of that boar which the torturers of Eukostarog are wont to pasture on the well-minced leavings of their wheels and racks. And moreover, my cooks have spiced it with the powerful balsams of the tomb, and have farced it with the hearts of adders and the tongues of black cobras."
Naught could the emperor say, and even Obexa was silent, being sorely troubled in her turpitude by the presence of that flayed and piteous thing which had the likeness of her lover from Sintrom. And her dread of the necromancer grew prodigiously, for his knowledge of this old, forgotten crime and the raising of the phantasm appeared to her a more baleful magic than all else.
"Now I fear," said Nomura, "that you find the meat devoid of savor, and the wine without fire. So, to enliven our feasting, I shall call forth my singers and my musicians."
He spoke a word unknown to Zotella or Obexa, which sounded throughout the mighty hall as if a thousand voices in turn had taken it up and prolonged it.
"Os nihabala! Os nihabala!"
Anon there appeared the singers, who were she-ghouls with shaven bodies and hairy shanks, and long yellow tushes, full of shredded carrion, curving across their chaps, from mouths that fawned hyena-wise on the company. Behind them entered the musicians, some of whom were male devils, pacing erect on the hind quarters of sable stallions, and plucking with the fingers of white apes at lyres of the bone and sinew of cannibals from Nayat. And others were pied satyrs, puffing their goatish cheeks at hautboys formed from the bosom skin of negro queens and the horn of rhinoceri. They bowed before Nomura with grotesque ceremony. Then, without delay, the she-ghouls began a most dolorous and execrable howling, as of jackals that have sniffed their carrion, and the satyrs and devils played a lament that was like the moaning of desert-bored winds through forsaken palace harems. And Zotella shivered, for the singing filled his marrow with ice, and the music left in his heart a desolation as of empires fallen and trodden under by the iron-shod hooves of time. Ever amid that evil music, he seemed to hear the sifting of sand across withered gardens, and the windy rustling of rotted silks upon couches of bygone luxury, and the hissings of coiled serpents from the low frusts of shattered columns. And the glory that had been Umaos seemed to pass away like the blown pillars of the Simoon.
"Now that was a brave tune,"
said Nomura, when the music ceased and the she-ghouls no longer howled.
"But verily, I fear that you find my entertainment somewhat dull. Therefore, my dancers shall dance for you.